Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The next president of the United States is not going to have to address the issue as to whether we went into Iraq or not. The next president of the United States is going to have to decide how we leave, when we leave, and what we leave behind.
We're currently spending $10 billion a month in Iraq when they have a $79 billion surplus. It seems to me that if we're going to be strong at home as well as strong abroad, that we've got to look at bringing that war to a close.
So as you hear in those really iconic clips of Obama and McCain from the last few months, Obama wants to focus on the fact that he opposed the war. John McCain wants to focus on the surge. While both of those stands are relevant to an argument over judgment, in this installment of our presidential election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days, we want to focus on what the next president will actually do in Iraq on January 20th, 2009 and beyond. Joining me for this discussion are Max Boot. He's the Jean Kirkpatrick Senior Fellow for National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and an advisor to the McCain campaign, and Andres Martinez, director of the Bernard Schwartz Fellows Program at the New America Foundation. He writes the blog Stumped at the Washington Post as well. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming on WNYC today for our presidential election series. Hello. And Andres Martinez, you're not officially affiliated with the Obama campaign, but I gather you're in large agreement with his views when it comes to where to go from here in Iraq, correct?
Correct. I'm neither officially or unofficially aligned with the campaign, but I think that on the question of Iraq, I would give Senator Obama the upper hand in terms of judgment so far. And in terms of where we go from here, I actually think that, what the next president does is going to be driven largely by events and the reality on the ground. So I think there are some nuanced differences between the two candidates, but I think this is a situation where, the reality will drive the decisions.
So to kind of go to the intro to this segment that I was articulating before the news, McCain says he'll keep the U.S. in until we win the war. Obama says he'll get combat troops out unless conditions don't allow. Do you think those are actually arriving at the same, middle point from two different directions?
I think there is a convergence there. And, I think the biggest shift in the campaign so far in terms of giving Senator Obama a great deal of credibility on foreign policy was when he went to Baghdad and over the summer, and essentially you had the Prime Minister of Iraq agree more or less with Senator Obama's time frame. He was talking about a 16-month timeline, and Maliki basically said, yes, that sounds, he had this interview in Der Spiegel in Germany, and he backed off a little bit. But it really was a boost to the Obama campaign because it basically signaled that, the Iraqis were sort of on the same page. Now, if events deteriorate, obviously Maliki's not going to want us to leave within 2 years, and I think Obama would reassess as well.
Yeah. So, Max Boot, do you think that at this point the official position of the Bush administration and the Iraqi government is actually closer to Obama's position than McCain's because they've come up with this agreement that actually has a timetable for withdrawal, and they both leave that escape valve open, that if things are so bad that the number of troops who are supposed to leave on that timetable can't leave on that timetable without things going to hell, then they won't leave. But that's sort of what Obama is saying, isn't it?
Well, I think it's a little bit hard to figure out what Senator Obama is saying because he's been all over the place, but I certainly think that the tentative agreement which has been reached by the Bush administration and the Maliki government is actually quite different from the stated Obama position because he talks about wanting to pull out all combat brigades within 16 months of taking office, and he's actually been in favor of that for a while now. I mean, he actually wanted to pull them all out by early in this year, which would have been a complete disaster, but he still wants to pull them out, and that means getting them out by mid-2010, whereas the accord negotiated by the two governments, which hasn't been finalized yet, calls for removing the troops by the end of 2011, which is another 16 months past where Obama would take
Well, I guess it's a question of when the 16 months start, right? Obama
hasn't been in office,
so he hasn't been able to start the 16-month clock yet, no?
Well, Obama tried to start the 16-month clock in 2007. He actually introduced legislation that would have forced our troops to leave by 2008 because by early 2008 because he claimed that the surge could not work. And obviously
yes.
we know that's an erroneous judgment. Now he claims he's going to start the clock ticking as soon as he comes into office, if he comes into office in early next year. And so the even under the accord with the Iraqi government, they want us to stay longer. And they also there's another important caveat in there, which is as conditions permit and if conditions change, we would slow down that withdrawal. Now, you're right that Obama sometimes makes it sound like he too would slow down a withdrawal based on conditions, but at other times he pledges that he will stick to the 16-month timetable. And in fact, he announced the 16-month timetable before he even visited Iraq in July, where he hadn't been there for more than 2 years, completely divorced from conditions on the ground. So it's a little bit hard to figure out where he's coming from, especially when you look, for example, at his changing position on the surge, which, you know, he said would not work, would actually make the situation worse. Now he says that it's exceeded his wildest expectations, but he still would have opposed it in retrospect.
Right.
I mean,
so Andres Martinez, do you at least give McCain that and take points from Obama, you know, on the actual military question, that if McCain said the troop surge would have roughly the effect that it has had, and Obama said that it would be a failure, then McCain's judgment on that kind of military matter exceeds Obama's?
I wouldn't go that far. I agree that Obama was wrong on the question of the surge in terms of feeling that it would, you know, and as were a lot of other people, including apparently some of Bush's own military commanders based on a lot of the new reporting that's come out. But I do think that on the larger question, you know, Obama was right in the debate the other night to say that Senator McCain wants to pretend that this war started in 2007, not 2003. And curiously, it was McCain giving the lecture to Senator Obama about the difference between tactics and strategy when, you know, the surge issue is more of a tactical adaptation to the larger question about the strategic decision to go to war because there were weapons of mass destruction, because, you know, we wanted to reconfigure the Middle East. But on the other question, you know, to Mac's earlier point about whether we're going to remain for a year or 2 years or 3 years, you know, bear in mind that Senator McCain has been talking about a century-long commitment. So, you know, whether Maliki wants 3 years and Obama wants 2 years, we're kind of more now in Obama's ballpark.
Well, we'll get to that, what McCain actually meant or didn't mean by 100 years. I want to play two clips of Senator Obama that seem perhaps to represent a change of his position over time. The first one is short. It's from 2007, talking about removing troops immediately.
The best way to protect our security and to pressure Iraq's leaders to resolve their civil war is to immediately begin to remove our combat troops. Not in 6 months or 1 year, but now.
So that was on September 12th of 07. Then in July of this year, Obama seemed to step away from that and clarified what he meant by a 16-month withdrawal.
Apparently I wasn't clear enough this morning on my position with respect to the war in Iraq. I have said throughout this campaign that this war was ill-conceived, that it was a strategic blunder, and that it needs to come to an end. I have also said that I would be deliberate and careful in how we got out, that I would bring our troops home at a pace of 1 to 2 brigades per month, and that that pace we would have our combat troops out in 16 months.
All right. So I don't know if that represents a change. At least it's at least a change in tone from September 07 when he just said immediately begin to remove our combat troops. Maybe the elastic clause there is the word begin, because you can
right.
take home five people, you know, and say you began. But does Obama get specific that you have heard, Andres Martinez, with respect to what the conditions are on the ground? that would stop him from withdrawing additional combat troops or brigades once he began? Is it clear to you? Because it all seems very vague.
It is very vague, and I think there are two things. One is this debate is not occurring in a vacuum. I mean, you have to I think we all have to be a little bit understanding and savvy about the fact that, you know, Senator Obama has been taking a lot of heat from activists within his party who want sort of a more absolute commitment to withdrawal and are very disappointed that he is sounding, you know, so measured and talks about getting out as carefully as with the kind of care that was lacking when we went in. I mean, a lot of the base of the party, a lot of his core supporters, you know, they don't want to begin to withdraw now. They want to withdraw completely, you know, and that's been the tenor of the debate. So, you know, I think that's one thing that we have to keep in mind. And the other is I don't think it behooves a future president to be too specific. I mean, I think he needs to keep his options open. He needs to be able to take, control and then reassess the situation and leave himself not, you know, get himself in a straitjacket.
Although one of the reasons,
unless these four things happen, I'm out of there by date certain.
Yeah, but one of the reasons that it got one of the reasons that he got the Democratic primary nomination is because Democratic primary voters heard him as more definitive than Hillary Clinton was on that exact question.
He was more definitive. I think he scored points by having opposed the war at the outset, and I don't think that he was much more adamant about the haste with which, you know, we should pull out than Hillary Clinton was.
Let me play now two clips of Senator McCain. The first has become kind of infamous on YouTube and beyond from January 4th of this year in Derry, New Hampshire. This is an exchange with an audience member at a New Hampshire primary campaign event. This is where the idea of staying for 100 years first came up.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
We've
been in South Korea. We've been in Japan for 60 years. We've been in South Korea for 50 years or so. That'd be fine with me. As long as Americans are not being injured or harmed or wounded or killed, then it's fine with me. I hope it would be fine with you if we maintain a presence in a very volatile part of the world where Al-Qaeda is training, recruiting, and equipping and motivating people every single day.
All right. So Max Boot, let me get you to try to explain it, because that has sounded to a lot of people like, at very least, he's cavalier about staying in and putting American troops at risk in Iraq. And it also raises the issue of whether he's for a sort of continued U.S. military-based presence in Iraq, which I think Obama is not for and a lot of Americans have come to oppose.
Well, Brian, first may I say that I find the notion that John McCain is cavalier about the use of force to be really offensive, frankly, because this is somebody who has known war in a way that I have not known, that Andres has not known, certainly that Barack Obama has not known. And this is somebody who has two sons who wear our nation's uniform. So the notion that he would casually throw away the lives of American troops for no good reason is just obscene to me. And that is not, in fact, what he's suggesting here. What he is saying is that he has learned from history, something that Barack Obama does not seem to have studied much. He has learned from history that the longer that American troops stay in a country, the greater the likelihood that we will be successful. And we have been supremely successful in countries like South Korea, Germany, and Japan because we didn't leave 16 months after the end of World War II. We're also being successful in Bosnia and Kosovo for the same reasons. Now, what Senator McCain suggested is that we ought to try to keep a presence in Iraq as long as possible, but that doesn't mean that we're going to be fighting there for 100 years, and he was quite clear about that. He meant that as long as we don't have casualties, there will not be much opposition. And in fact, when you look at what the Iraqi government is saying and the people of Iraq are saying, if you read the public opinion polls, although there is a push to take out our combat forces in the next few years, there is also a desire to keep a training and advisory and other presence in Iraq for a much longer term period. That is essential to safeguard this budding democracy, which is in a very rough neighborhood and under siege from Iranian Al-Qaeda and other terrorists.
There is a counter movement, though, and an argument made by people, including Republicans like Congressman Scott Garrett from our area here in New Jersey, who is for the war, certainly for McCain, but who says the U.S. should not have permanent bases in Iraq.
Well, we don't have permanent bases anywhere in the world. There is no such thing as a permanent base. Even in the case of the Philippines, where we had bases for many, many decades, when the government of the Philippines in the early 1990s asked us to remove our forces from Clark Field and Subic Bay, we said we will do so because we do not impose our military presence on allies unless they want us there. And that's certainly the case in Iraq or any other country. If they ask us to leave, we will leave. But they haven't asked us to leave. And what Senator Obama is proposing is a very dangerous withdrawal, which has the possibility to sabotage all the progress we made in the surge. It's something that our military leaders, starting with Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, have warned against, have said would be very dangerous. But Senator Obama has been playing politics with our nation's security in the case of Iraq because, as you were pointing out earlier, he was essentially trying to appeal to the anti-war left-wing faction within the Democratic Party during the primaries by taking the most anti-war position possible. And now he's tried to back off a little bit from that, but he still has stuck by his irresponsible 16-month pledge. And so that gives me a lot of concern, especially when, you know, the best thing you can say for Senator Obama is what some of his advisors have said, which is essentially that he doesn't mean it. He's not really going to pull out on a 16-month timetable because he will be more realistic than that. I mean, I hope so. I certainly hope so. But, you know, it's scant cause for hope if the best that his advisors can say for him is that he's not leveling about what he's actually going to do.
So, Andres Martinez, is this an issue for you, this 100-year statement by McCain? Because I think it's clear from a close listening to that clip that he did not mean we should fight for 100 years in Iraq. In fact, he said specifically, as long as Americans are not being injured or harmed or wounded or killed, that's fine with me, meaning the kind of peacekeeping presence after a war that we have in Korea and other places. Is it an issue for you in the sense of a permanent occupation that Max Boot says it would not be, that McCain takes this position about keeping a lot of American troops there?
I agree that the context of what McCain said did get blown a little bit out of proportion in sort of the silly season of politics. But, you know, then you end up with this sort of oddly backwards logic that we can stay there if our troops are not in harm's way, which seems a little bit backward. And I have to disagree with Max's depicting Senator Obama's position as irresponsible because, again, he has said he wants to pull out in 16 months, but if events warrant, we will stay. And that's in contrast to the position of many Democrats in Congress who want out by a date certain no matter what. So, you know, I think the irresponsibility here has to be laid at the doorstep of the White House that entered into this war, didn't plan well for the occupation. And to Senator McCain's credit, he was an early critic of the way the occupation was handled. So, you know, at least McCain and Obama can agree on that. But I don't think it's irresponsible at all to say, you know, my goal is to pull out 16 months, but we may not be able to. I mean, even the White House now has an aspirational time horizon. You know, in the vernacular of the McCain camp, a timeline is irresponsible, but a time horizon is prudent. And this is just sort of semantics.
Well, Andres, if I could, I think what Barack Obama is trying to do is to really have it both ways. He's trying to appeal to people like you who realize the dangers of a 16-month timetable by saying that he might adjust it, but he was also trying to appeal to the anti-war constituency within the Democratic Party by rolling out the 16-month timetable. So I think it's very hard to know what he's going to do. I think one other point that I'd like to make is that, you know, he talks a lot about his vaunted judgment in foreign affairs, but really the only example that he ever cites is the fact that he opposed the Iraq War. And, of course, his running mate now supported the Iraq War, so clearly supporting the Iraq War cannot be a disqualification for high office in his view. And, frankly, I just question to what extent it showed tremendous judgment on his part, because remember, when in 2002, when the war was the issue and various people were taking sides on it, Obama was still a state senator representing the south side of Chicago, a very liberal area. So taking a stand against the war was not some kind of brave stand in the face of received wisdom. It was basically telling his constituents what they wanted to hear.
Well, come on, Max. You and I both know that he didn't want to have his entire political career be based on the south side of Chicago. He clearly had national aspirations, and you're right. It was an exceptional judgment call. The conventional wisdom said we have to fight this war. I thought it was a good idea at the time. But clearly, he's been proven right by events in terms of the costs and benefits behind the decision. And I think the Republicans have tried to have it both ways, too. It's not just Senator Obama. The whole reason that the White House has been advancing this notion of a time horizon to get out, and it's aspirational and it's different. You know, the time frame is a little bit longer than Obama's, but all of that is with an eye towards getting Iraq off the table as the main issue of this election, and which clearly it no longer is because it's been overshadowed by the economy. And I think it's also because a lot of people understand that at the end of the day, whoever is president is going to be reacting to facts on the ground, the disposition of the Iraqi government, and there's not going to be that great of a difference, I don't think.
But the
strategic judgment is what's going to matter. And when you look at, you know, the sort of lack of judgment and sort of erratic behavior of McCain that we saw last week, you sort of wonder, you know, are we going to...
Andres, before you get too deep into the attack on McCain, let me just say that I think I have a different interpretation of why the White House is now willing to talk about a time horizon. It's simply because the surge, which Senator McCain supported and which Senator Obama opposed, has transformed the situation radically so that it is not as irresponsible as it was at one point to talk about the American troop withdrawals. And obviously,
right.
Senator McCain has always said he will withdraw troops as conditions warrant. Conditions have certainly improved for the better, because we have not followed the Barack Obama pullout plan.
So when we continue in a minute, let's talk more about those conditions and what they really would need to look like to either withdraw or declare victory, depending on what you want to call it. As we continue with 30 Issues in 30 Days, our presidential election series, Issue 8, What is Left to Fight For in Iraq? Stay with us. Issues in 30 Days, our presidential election series, Issue 8, What's Left to Fight For in Iraq. My guests are Max Boot, who is a National Security Studies Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of War Made New, Technology, Warfare, and the Course of History, 1500 to Today, and Andres Martinez, a Fellows Program member at the New America Foundation and writes the blog Stumped at the Washington Post. Boot for McCain's positions on this, Martinez for Obama's positions on what's left to fight for in Iraq. And let's go back to the candidate's own words. How does each candidate define success or define victory? Here's Barack Obama.
True success in Iraq, victory in Iraq, will not take place in a surrender ceremony where an enemy lays down their arms. True success will take place when we leave Iraq to a government that is taking responsibility for its future, a government that prevents sectarian conflict and ensures that the al-Qaeda threat, which has been beaten back by our troops, does not reemerge.
And how does John McCain define success in Iraq?
Success in Iraq and Afghanistan is the establishment of a peaceful, stable, prosperous, democratic states that pose no threat to neighbors and contribute to the defeat of terrorists.
So, Max Boot, are those definitions of success pretty much the same thing?
I'm not sure that they are, because what Senator Obama said is success will be when we leave Iraq. In other words, he views leaving Iraq as being ultimately the most important objective.
Well, wait, just to be clear, just to get that quote in context, he said true success will take place when we leave Iraq to a government that is taking responsibility for its future.
Well, that's true. But, you know, if you look at the situations in countries like South Korea, Germany, Japan, and so forth, true success came about even though we didn't leave. So, and when you look at Bosnia and Kosovo and elsewhere, you know, it's leaving can undermine what looks to be success. And so I think what Senator Obama is doing is placing leaving as the ultimate objective, whereas Senator McCain is placing winning as the ultimate objective. And I think it's very telling that Senator Obama never once uses the words win or victory when talking about what we're trying to achieve in Iraq. He wants to end the war, or at least end our involvement in the war, whereas Senator McCain wants to win the war.
So, Andres Martinez,
that's a huge difference.
On that point, does Senator Obama support withdrawal as a way of cutting our losses or as a way of forcing the Iraqis to overcome their political differences and achieve this definition of success?
I think it's a combination. You know, and I don't blame him at all for being kind of modest in his aspirations, given the mess that this administration has gotten us into. And I think it's telling that even, you know, Senator McCain's definition of victory is quite different from what was first postulated when we went into Iraq. I mean, the rhetoric of this administration suggested that, you know, we were going to build a shining city on the hill in the Middle East, and this was going to be a flourishing, you know, middle-class society that was going to kind of, by example, almost topple all these dictatorships elsewhere in the Middle East, and we were going to transform the region. Senator McCain, in his most triumphalist moments these days, isn't suggesting that. He's just basically saying, if this country doesn't bother its neighbors and it kind of, you know, is democratic and carries on, that'll be great. So I do think there's a gap between the definition of success between the two candidates, but the more glaring gap is the definition of victory and success between what was first the expectation of President Bush and the reality we're in now.
So, Max Boot, unpack this McCain definition of success for me a little further. If he says success is the establishment of a peaceful, stable, prosperous democratic state that poses no threat to its neighbors and contributes to the defeat of terrorists, that could be taken as a very high bar. That, you know, that it may be a long time after U.S. troops leave that Iraq is really peaceful, really stable, prosperous is a whole other measure. We're not staying in there to fight for Iraq's standard of living, I don't think, for the ordinary Iraqi. And in terms of contributing to the defeat of terrorists, you know, there is an al-Qaeda presence in Iraq. How much does that have to be defeated before he considers that we are safe to leave?
Well, I don't think it's an unreasonable standard at all. It might have seemed that way a couple of years ago when the conventional wisdom in Washington, echoed by Barack Obama, was that defeat was inevitable and there's no way we could secure any of our objectives in Iraq and we had to scuttle out with our tail between our legs. But certainly the success of the surge, which Senator McCain was the leading champion of, has made success in the terms that he's outlined, I think, eminently achievable, as long as we don't throw away the gains of the past 18 months by leaving prematurely. Now, I think Senator Obama is operating under a very curious theory, which I think has not been backed up by events at all, which is that the faster we leave, the more likely it is that the Iraqis will get their act together and reconcile their differences. Whereas, in fact, we know reality has been the opposite, that in 2006, under the Casey Abizade Rumsfeld model, we were taking our troops off the streets, and the result was not that Iraqis were getting their act together. The result was they were engaging in terrible ethnic violence, ethnic cleansing, leading towards the brink of all-out civil war, whereas with our troops deployed on the streets and pacifying Iraqi neighborhoods along with Iraqi security forces in the past 18 months, the government of Iraq and various factions within Iraq have been able to take major steps forward to achieve political reconciliation, the most recent of which was the agreement of the parliament to hold provincial elections. And so I think what John McCain believes is, as long as we're slow and prudent in our withdrawal, we can continue encouraging these kinds of political steps that the Iraqis are taking. But if we pull out prematurely, all of that political progress may be lost, and Iraq may be back to the dark days of 2006.
But how many of those things, regional elections in Iraq or anything else, are really relevant to U.S. national security and what's worth continuing to spend $10 billion a month or whatever the real figure is on in the midst of the financial crisis?
Well, the reason it's worthwhile is because if we leave prematurely, we would hand a victory to Iranian extremists and to al-Qaeda extremists, our enemies. The fact is that over the past 2 years, al-Qaeda in Iraq has suffered devastating blows which would never have happened were it not for the surge. Also, more recently, the Jaish al-Mahdi, the militia led by Muqtada al-Sadr and backed by Iran, has also suffered devastating blows. Those are victories for our side. Those are victories for
the
war on terrorism.
One could also argue that if the war had not been entered into in the first place, which could be said to have been terrible judgment, then Iran would not have been as strengthened as it is now. And even with a peaceful, stable, prosperous Iran that doesn't allow an al-Qaeda base, I mean Iraq, that doesn't allow an al-Qaeda base, Iran is still much stronger than it was before 2003, no?
I don't think that's the case at all. Certainly Iran was strengthened by some of the problems that we had in Iraq initially, no question about it. The lack of post-invasion planning, the lack of troops, which is something that John McCain criticized at the time, the setbacks we suffered, absolutely, that strengthened Iran. But the gains that we've made in the last 18 months have been a devastating blow to Iran. In fact, that's not just me talking. Vali Nasser, who is a well-known Iranian-American scholar and certainly not somebody who's at all friendly to the Bush administration, he returned from Iraq a few months ago and wrote an op-ed for the New York Times saying that Iran is suffering defeat after defeat in Iraq, largely because of the surge. And we've seen it in the case of Basra and Sadr City, where the Iranian proxies have been driven out. So,
Andres Martinez, same question.
Brian,
go ahead.
I think it's important to point out that this obsession with whether we're going to be able to, put Iraq in the win column or the loss column. That does feel like a sort of cavalier treatment of foreign policy, as if it were some sporting event. And this issue of whether.
But
you know,
he's saying there are real implications.
Well, there are real implications for how we leave, and that's why Obama is saying we're going to leave with care. I don't think there's any danger of a premature withdrawal at this point. And I think, I think we can succeed in stabilizing Iraq and then leave. And it's not whether you won or you lost. I think the historical verdict is going to be that war was a mistake. It doesn't mean that we're going to throw our arms up and let the place completely fall apart or be reckless, and that's not what Obama's proposing. But to pretend that it's going to be a victory, given the costs and the objectives going in, is just completely divorced from reality. And at a certain point, you do have to ratchet down your commitment, even if the country would otherwise fall into disarray. 5, 6, 10 years from now, you're not going to have the political will to keep 150,000 troops engaged. I don't think I think it's unlikely this would be necessary. But if it were necessary under Max's view, then we have to stay there no matter what. And I just don't think that that's within the realm of reality.
Well,
I think
this
at some
is
point
the most.
We're going to have to...
This is the most. This is the biggest difference that I think either of you have articulated the entire time, at least in terms of theory going forward. You're saying that. You're saying that you think, and I guess Obama's position would be, to accept defeat at some point where McCain wouldn't, just to cut our losses.
I don't think we have to get in the game of having to label something a win or a loss. I think we have to deal. I agree with Max that we have to deal with the realities that exist today, and fighting over the decision in 2003. I think Obama was right. McCain and I and others were wrong, but that doesn't mean that you can just sort of walk away from the problem today. The surge has improved matters, and you don't want to undo the problem pulling out overnight. But it would still feel oddly, it would be dishonest 2 years from now if we pulled out and al-Qaeda has been defeated and things are relatively stable to say we won the war. I still think it's a bit bizarre. We won, again, to go back to Obama's formulation in the debate, we won the war that we could pretend started in 2007, but I'm not sure that this will have been a wise investment of U.S. troops and wealth.
We're already over our time, and we're going to bring in two other guests and talk about veterans policy as part of this, but I just want to get a last very brief thought, like 30 seconds from each of you, and Andre, starting with you, on whether there is anything owed to the Iraqis from a moral standpoint on the basis of how badly the war has gone. Does Barack Obama feel that we have a moral obligation to stay in, perhaps even longer than U.S. national security would dictate, if that is seen as helping Iraq restabilize and grow up again, you know, grow again after the debacle of the war?
This is the sort of the general Powell doctrine of the pottery barn.
Right.
Yes, there is some moral obligation to, you know, prevent genocide and to be reckless. But I think at a certain point, you know, we have created all the conditions necessary for Iraqis to come together, and now it's up to them.
Max Boot, last word.
I think we do have a moral responsibility to the people of Iraq, but more importantly, we have a strategic responsibility to our own interests. And frankly, I'm shocked that Andres and his candidate, Barack Obama, think that it doesn't matter whether we win or lose a war. I think it matters an awful lot. In fact, I can't think of anything that matters more for our long-term security and stability that we defeat al-Qaeda and that we defeat the Iranian extremists in Iraq, which is what we're doing now, and a win or a loss. That makes a huge, huge difference, because a loss would be a devastating defeat for us and a tremendous victory for the terrorists. That's something we have to avoid at all costs, and that's something that John McCain will not allow to happen on his watch.
Max Boot from the Council on Foreign Relations, author of War Made New, Technology, Warfare, and the Course of History, 1500 to Today. Andres Martinez from the New America Foundation and author of the Stumped blog at the Washington Post. Thank you very much for diving into this in such detail today.
Thank you, Brian, and nice talking to you, Max.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, 30 Issues in 30 Days, Part 8, What's Left to Fight For in Iraq, and Part 8A coming up right after the news. Who'd be the better president for Iraq War veterans? Stay with us. Not coming up after the news, as I said, just coming up after a one-minute break. Stay tuned. And some of you may be interested in my Wednesday night television show where web video meets the issues. Tonight's videos include a version of the bailout bill in the style of The Dark Knight. That's tonight at 7:30 on CUNY TV, Channel 75, on the New York City cable systems.
I meet veterans all across the country who are trying to figure out, how can I get disability payments? I've got post-traumatic stress disorder, and yet I can't get treatment.
I know the veterans. I know them well. And I know that they know that I'll take care of them. And I've been proud of their support and their recognition of my service to the veterans.
Senators Obama and McCain from last Friday night's debate. There are 1.7 million troops and veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the current administration hasn't always gotten rave reviews when it comes to caring for vets and their families. We all remember the reports of deplorable conditions at the Walter Reed Medical Facility, and with so many troops and veterans, and with that number rising as the wars continue, what will the next president do for military families in the next administration? What will their challenges be? Joining us to talk about the Bush administration's record and then what the candidates have said they'll do for veterans are Paul Rykoff, founder and executive director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, and Eric Hilleman. He's deputy director of legislative affairs for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Both are also vets themselves. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC today. Thanks so much for coming on.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning.
Eric Hilleman, how would you characterize, first of all, the Bush administration's record over the last 8 years on veterans affairs?
Well, the administration has been very proud in touting its massive increases to the Veterans Administration budget. The massive increases, though, have been driven by the dramatic increase in the number of veterans with this conflict. It's true that a number of veterans are leaving the system because we're losing World War II veterans at about 1,000 a day. However, the number of veterans from the Vietnam era that are seeking services in VA has increased, as well as the number of returning veterans who are filing claims and seeking treatment at VA hospitals upon their return to the States.
Paul Rykoff, same question.
I think the Bush administration has had a pretty poor record on veterans issues. I think I'll just start with the fact that although we have seen the largest funding increase in 77 years to the VA, it took 5 years into the war in Iraq and more than that into the war in Afghanistan before we got there. So really what you're seeing in Congress is a game of catch-up. The new Congress, the 110th Congress, deserves credit. They did pass this huge budget increase, which will trickle down to veterans hospitals around the country. They also passed a new GI Bill, but we've still got a backlog backlog of claims at the VA that's in the hundreds of thousands. We had the Walter Reed fiasco, which sent ripple effects to DOD, Department of Defense facilities around the country. And I think you've really just had a lack of urgency regarding veterans' issues, whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder, women's issues, or traumatic brain injury. The president has not been a vocal, consistent advocate when it comes to pushing policy that helps new veterans.
Have things at least improved much, in your view, since the Walter Reed scandal broke last year?
They have. And I think Congress deserves a lot of credit there. When Nancy Pelosi came in, she said she was going to do two things, pass a budget that was adequate, and she did that, and she worked with Congress to achieve that, and both parties deserve credit. And she said she was going to pass a new GI Bill, which I would argue is the biggest, most significant piece of veterans legislation in over a generation. It took the Walter Reed scandal to really generate the grassroots support, and I think the level of accountability we needed in Washington. But as you mentioned, we've got almost 2 million folks who've served in Iraq and Afghanistan or are facing a multitude of issues, and when you think about the economic stress that our country is facing right now, I just want to put forward that veterans are feeling that even harder. If you're thinking about rising gas prices, if you're thinking about expensive gas, imagine all that after you just got back from a 12 to 18 month deployment. Our folks are under some significant stress, and they're going to need consistent leadership in the next few months and from whoever's elected president.
Any Iraq War vets or other war vets, for that matter, if you want to call in and talk about Veterans Affairs in particular as an issue in the presidential race, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. You can endorse a candidate, or you can just raise what issues you think need to be addressed in the next administration with respect to Veterans Affairs of any kind, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show. Eric Hilleman from Veterans of Foreign Wars, what is at the top of your agenda going into the next administration? Is it all about access to good health care and mental health care, or is it much broader than that?
Well, those are hallmark issues for the VFW. Two issues very quickly. I believe AVA and Paul can certainly speak to this, are seeking to get funding on time. That's been a reoccurring issue. We've done very well this year and last year, and Walter Reed has contributed to the urgency in many lawmakers' minds that veterans' health care and health care for active duty service members needs to be improved. We are seeking an advanced appropriation, which would essentially ensure that VA gets its funding on time. Having the nation's largest hospital network managed, not knowing what the next year budget is detrimental to not only the health and welfare of veterans, but it's detrimental to the managers who have to figure out if they're going to buy copy paper this month or they're going to buy bandages to treat the patients that walk in. You have to make very difficult decisions. VA has not had a budget on time, I believe, in over the last 10 years. So this is something that we'd like to see happen in the next Congress, certainly.
And Paul Rykoff from Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, 15% of the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan are women. How does this change veterans' care issues from past wars?
Dramatically. Some of the first folks that we saw coming through our doors at our headquarters here in New York were female veterans who were telling us early in the war that they were going to VA hospitals without women's bathrooms, VA hospitals that had never had to deal with single mothers before, had never had to deal with rape or sexual assault. These are new issues that our female veterans are facing, and they're on the front lines right alongside their male counterparts. And I think what it revealed early on is that we've got an outdated VA system. This bureaucracy has not been modernized, and it has not been granted the flexibility to deal with these issues or a variety of others. And when we talk to what we're looking from the next president, we've got a top 10 list that's on our website. But at the top of that list is thorough, professional, confidential mental health screening. As many as 1 in 4 veterans coming home can have a mental health injury like post-traumatic stress disorder. And we need a mandatory confidential screening, not only when they first get home, but at least 90 days after they come home from a combat tour. Eric talked about the VA health care funding, which is critical. We also need to overhaul the military and veterans disability system. This is another example of how the system is fundamentally outdated. We need to streamline that process and provide adequate benefits for all our wounded troops.
So we've spent actually most of our time laying out the issues, which I'm glad that we did, because there's actually so little talk in the media, I think, about veterans issues and particularly veterans who are still coming home now from these two wars. But let's spend our remaining time comparing the candidates. I wonder, and Paul, I'll start with you, what you see as the fundamental differences between each of the presidential candidates, Obama and McCain, or are they pretty much on the same page going forward with respect to veterans' issues?
I think there are some pretty sharp differences, and next week our organization will release a report card that we do after every congressional session to rate members of Congress. We'll give everybody a letter grade, and that'll be released next week. But I think one of the first differences I want to point out is simple attendance. You can't support veterans if you don't show up to vote. Senator McCain has missed more votes than any member of the Senate, 64.5%. He missed more votes than Senator Tim Johnson, who was in a coma. Third is Senator Barack Obama. He's missed 46.5% of the votes. And our organization laid out 9 key votes that impact new veterans, ranging from veterans' health care to funding for mine-resistant vehicles to the new GI Bill. And of those top 9 votes, unfortunately, Senator McCain missed 6 of them. Senator Obama missed 4 of them. So we need them to be there. And specifically, we look to the GI mm-hmm. Bill, which is a real differentiator between the two. Senator Obama was a consistent supporter of the new GI Bill. He was an early co-sponsor of the GI Bill. And Senator McCain was one of the biggest opponents. So I think that that's definitely going to impact the way that the veterans view them going forward. And as a note, there are about 25 million veterans of all generations who are going to be voting this fall. 2 million of them in Iraq and Afghanistan.
This new GI Bill primarily giving more education benefits to returning veterans ultimately was voted for by both of them. I'm going to play a clip now of each of them from May. This is Obama talking about his version of a GI Bill along with Senator Webb of Virginia.
Now, I have great respect for John McCain's service to this country. I know he loves it dearly and honors those who serve. But John McCain is one of the few senators of either party who opposed this bill because he thinks it's too generous. He thinks it's too generous. Now, I could not disagree with him more. At a time when the skyrocketing cost of tuition is pricing thousands of Americans out of a college education, we should be doing everything we can to give the men and women who have risked their lives for this country the chance to pursue their American dream.
One correction from my introduction to that clip. Senator McCain, as Paul Rykoff noted, was absent for the vote on the GI Bill. He did say that he would have supported it in its final form. Here is Senator McCain's response to the Obama criticism that we just heard.
I believe that I have earned the right to speak out on veterans' issues. As a matter of fact, I've received the highest award from literally every veterans organization in America. I don't know if the American people will judge Senator Obama as to whether he has military experience or not, but I think they may judge him as to whether he has experience and knowledge to make the kind of judgment necessary to care for our veterans.
Now, Eric Hilleman, McCain's position has been that he opposed the initial version of the bill because it would have caused many people to leave the military after too short a time to go out and get those benefits, and that he came to support it once those benefits became transferable in a later part of the bill. So if a spouse of somebody serving or a child of somebody serving wants to take advantage of the benefits they can, even while the family member stays in. So did he improve the bill, or did he just, help to block it for a while?
Well, there are some diverging views on Senator McCain's role in the creation of the GI Bill. Certainly Senator Webb deserves incredible thanks for the work that he did in creating this life-changing benefit for a number of veterans. The bill that Senator McCain worked on with Senator Graham and Senator Burr had a component of transferability, and that seemed to be the core of the bill. When they first initially brought this bill into public light, it was a lesser benefit than the other two GI bills that were being talked about at that time, which were Webb's bill and a bill that was originated in the House Veterans Affairs Committee by Stephanie Hirsa Sandlin of South Dakota. His bill was lesser compensation for veterans in that realm, but a higher compensation for active duty individuals who stay in service. So he's very retention centric. It wasn't focused on, it was not focused on the transition benefit as much as the Webb-style bill or the Hearst-Sandlin bill.
And
was.
Unfortunately, we only have 30 seconds. So Paul Rieckhoff, on this, since you've been so critical of McCain's role during that debate, did he not wind up helping to improve the bill by holding out for this transferability?
No, he didn't, because transferability was already an option of the defense secretary. The transferability was already in the bill at the discretion of the Secretary of the Army, Secretary of Navy. And as a matter of fact, Senator Webb, Senator Hagel, and Senator Warner, who is a pretty right-wing Republican, met with Senator McCain's office repeatedly and offered to install transferability into the process. Senator McCain was not interested in being part of this process. There were 53 original co-sponsors, and he wasn't one of them.
And we have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but that is our discussion of Veterans Affairs as part of 30 Issues in 30 Days, Issue 8, What's Left to Fight For in Iraq and Who'd Be the Better President for Iraq and Afghanistan. That's Eric Hilleman from Veterans of Foreign Wars, Paul Rieckhoff from Iraq and Afghanistan, Vets of America. Thank you both.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.